This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to Carol Goodman. She has written a book called River Road with a really cool blue cover on it. I love this snowy blue cover on the... How are you?
I'm doing great, David. Thank you.
It's I'm trying to figure out what the what is going through the title of the book. There's like lines going. Is that like supposed to be a road?
I think the sort of roughness of the type is maybe supposed to be ice, or I am not privy to the art department's thinking, but I think it's supposed to be sort of rough and perhaps look like ice.
I have to talk to one of these artists one of these days and get their take on these. Some of these covers are just so wild. Some of them, you're like, what were they thinking then?
No.
You know, they're not always the best covers, but I like this cover. I like the blue.
Yeah, I too, actually. I was very happy when I saw the cover.
But it's funny because I'll ask authors, you know, if they like the cover, and they'll say they do, but they never say what they like about it. They just say they like it. It's sort of like...
Basically, because it does have that feeling of driving down a wintry road, and it's a little bit askew, which I think the whole book is a little bit askew. It's, you know, about having something happen to you that throws your life askew.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that little kind of angle on it.
I must admit, I will never forget what happens on page 133. And I'm going to get everybody really curious now, but there's something happening. What's that?
I'm reaching for my copy.
But you'll know right away when you see it. But we can't talk about it because it'll give something away. But
okay.
But it's definitely something that I thought, oh, well, now.
I see.
And everybody listening is like, what the hell are they talking about? This is crazy.
Oh, yeah. 133.
So how did you start writing at age 9? You were just writing in school? You just started...
Yes, my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Dubinsky, bless her heart, started the subject creative writing, which in 1968 wasn't something that every teacher did. But they probably do now, but it wasn't a common topic then. And so I started writing a story called The Adventures of the Magical Herd. I loved, like many 9-year-old girls, loved horses. Read a lot of horse books, and then I just wouldn't stop. You know, it was time to go on to other subjects, and my teacher had to call my mother in and say, well, you know, we love these stories of Carol, but she has to do her other work. And I wrote 90 pages of The Adventures of the Magical Herd about this girl who goes to live with a wild herd of horses. No mention is ever made of her actual human family.
And do you still have the story?
I do. In fact, I was just talking to a friend about it, and I promised her I would go find it. I'm just thinking now, I'm not entirely sure where it is, but I believe it's in one of these many file boxes in my study. And, yeah, somehow I've kept it all these years. And I showed it to my daughter when she was little. She bemoaned my artistic ability because it's crayon illustrated, and she's a much better artist than I, so we can see why. I kept with the writing and not with the drawing part of it.
Is writing hard for you?
Yes. I think it's...
Why, though? You're very good at it. I mean, the story is very interesting. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And when I was reading it, I just got more and more into the book. And I just found myself being... totally losing myself in the story and knowing...
Well, thank you. It's always a struggle, I think, to get what some image in your brain down on the paper. Once you get going with it, it can be exhilarating, and obviously I enjoy doing it. But it never feels easy. It always feels like a bit of a struggle, and some days more than others.
And you've written how many books now?
Well, it depends how you count. If you count the, so I wrote three with my husband as a collaborator, and he recently informed me I couldn't just claim those as my own. So without those, this is my 14th book.
Wow.
And again, three of those would be, are under a pseudonym, another pseudonym, Juliet Dark, a fantasy series I did. Three are YA. So, okay, now I've lost the math, but this is actually my, I guess my eighth adult mystery. That probably doesn't add up if anyone's trying to do the math somewhere, but that's about it.
You obviously love mysteries because you mentioned mysteries in the book. I remember one point you mentioned Agatha Christie, and you know, so we know you like mysteries, obviously.
Yes, I do. I've always liked mysteries. I like a lot of different kinds of writing, so and I've done a few different kinds of writing as well. But I think every book has a mystery at the heart of it, and I like classic mysteries. I like Agatha Christie. I like Raymond Chandler. I like the kind of noir mysteries. I like a lot of current mystery writers. There's a lot of British mysteries I like to read. So, you know, I think it always has a sort of surefire way of drawing us in that there's, you know, something serious or disastrous has happened, and we have to figure out why.
So why, tell me why authors have these other names. You know, you publish under another name. Why do you do that? Why? I've always wondered what that's all about. Are you just trying to be a success twice or three times? Is that what it is?
If that were it. It depends on I personally have done it for two different reasons. The first time my husband and I wrote under the name Lee Carroll because there was the two of us, and so his name is Lee, my name is Carol, so we used the pseudonym to express instead of putting both our names on it.
That's pretty
then,
cool.
The fantasy novels that I wrote for Valentine under the name Juliet Dark, that was actually the publisher suggested that, because they were such a departure from my previous books that they thought it would be a good idea to distinguish those books from what I had been writing, so somebody wouldn't think, "Oh, I'm reading another Carol Goodman mystery," and like her previous books, and then be disappointed. I at the time was not, I wasn't thrilled to do it because I saw more of a continuation, a line through what I had been writing before. And although I had been writing books that were primarily mysteries, they also concerned a lot of folklore, fairy tale, and for me, when I went into fantasy, my idea was that, well, now the fairy tales are true. And there wasn't such a leap. But my publisher saw it differently. And in a way, I've had mixed feelings about having done that. But in some ways, I can see now that it's useful to have those books somewhat distinguished from the other books so people know what they're getting into if they read a Juliet Dark book.
Right, exactly. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
But I always thought, you know, like Nora Roberts writes under another name. I thought, wouldn't she sell more books if it said Nora Roberts on the cover?
Yeah. That I don't know. I mean, people have had many reasons over the years for using pseudonyms. You know, sometimes it's the sort of brand the books is a different kind of book. Nora Roberts, and sometimes with the idea that you get more, a debut author can get a bit of more of a push in the marketplace. But I've always been suspicious of that as a tactic that works because everyone pretty much knows who you are. Now, some people have done it for J.K. Rowling. It did it for the opposite reason. She didn't want to be judged by when she wrote under the Robert Galbraith pseudonym. She wanted to be judged as a new writer, not you know, not have people run out and buy her book because she was J.K. Rowling, but it kind of backfired on her, and everyone realized it was her, and sort of leaked out.
And they're right, but the writing's so different, you think. Are you sure this is the same person? You know, because it's such a different kind of style of writing from Harry Potter, and you think...
I admire her for going ahead and just, you know, being, you know, writing something new.
Now, you wrote a book called The Lake of Dead Languages, which apparently, and I haven't read it yet, I must admit, very critically acclaimed. Well, what was that book about?
That was, that's my first novel, first published novel, and it's about a young woman, or woman in her mid-30s, Jane Hudson, who goes to the Latin teacher at a private school, the Heart Lake School for Girls up in the Adirondacks, and she had gone to the school when she was a teenager, and as she's living and teaching there, she finds that somebody is aware of something that happened when she was a student there, and is threatening her with the disclosure of those secrets. So we get to find out what the secrets were. So that's what it's about. Latin teacher, Adirondacks.
You like writing about teachers.
I do. It's the only other real job I've done other than writing. And I've worked as a secretary and done a few other things, but it was, I was trained to be a high school teacher, and I taught middle school for a couple of years, and I teach college now. I like the relationship, I like the dynamic of a teacher standing in front of a classroom and dealing with these younger students. And I like the world of the enclosed world of a boarding school or a college. It's an atmosphere I really like. I try to make myself every other book or so write, find some other profession to write about, but it's the one I feel most comfortable with and one I keep coming back to.
Write what you know, then, in other words.
Yeah.
This is what. And, you know, I read Robert Dugani's, one of the things that kept me going with the book, too, was reading what Robert Dugani said on the back of it, and I thought, oh, because I like his writing, so I thought, well, if he okayed it, then I definitely have to read it.
So. Yeah. A generous endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, and writers do that, and I've read some books where there was been an endorsement, and I read the book, and I'm like, why would they endorse this book? You know, you always have books like that, but this book was really, really good. I mean, I really felt like it was worth my time, and just sitting and reading it last night was very enjoyable. I mean, and you know, some books you really enjoy, some you just don't get. And I don't, you know, like, why is it like that? I guess it's just the style of writing is not what you want. I don't
there
know.
There are quite, thank goodness, there are a lot of different tastes, and so there are a lot of different books.
I like books like Gone Girl, where people can just talk about it. I mean, some people loved it, some people hated it, and, you know, you can just, generally, most people liked it, but, you know.
General response, yes.
I mean, you get so much of a discussion going about it that it's like, that it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, and it seems to, especially with Gone Girl, seems to spark, be connected to something that is going on in people's lives that brings up a lot of emotion. So I think if you can sort of tap into that zeitgeist, you're...
Now, you're really not writing a book a year. Yours are more like, what, 2 or 3 years apart?
Actually, if you look at, cause I've been writing young adult books as well. I have been writing a book a year for quite a while. They're not all adult novels, you know, there's the young adult series, but yeah.
So you have, but just not the mysteries that everybody...
Yeah, but the other ones take quite a bit of time, too, the young adult.
Right. But what kind of a reaction do people that read the mysteries realize that you have all these other books generally?
Sometimes and sometimes not, and I get different kinds of, I mean, I only find this out if somebody writes to me on my website or on Facebook. Sometimes people are surprised. Sometimes they're confused and they want to know, you know, which kind of book is this. Or I had not written a mystery for a number of years, so I was beginning to get a number of emails saying, why don't you write one of those other, you know, adult mystery books again, you know, what's with all these fairies? But now, the minute I sat down and wrote a mystery, I started getting emails from people going, when are you going to write another fantasy book? So, you can't please all the people all the time.
Isn't it nice to be a writer, though, and not really be, I mean, you're people on the street don't recognize you, so you can actually be, you can actually walk down your street and not be bothered by, oh, I know who you are. Or do you? Do you get recognized?
No.
I didn't think so. You don't have that John Grisham kind of, oh, we know who you are.
No, not at all. No.
Even though your picture's on the book, you know, people don't.
No, it's not I do not have that that problem at all. I move through my life quite anonymously. Although, you know, people know that I'm a, you know, my friends certainly know I'm a writer. And, my students sometimes do, but it's not big on anyone's list, I think, too. Every once in a while I get a question.
So Nan Lewis, now, how old is Nan at the beginning of this book, would you say?
She's in her, I'd say, early to mid-30s. I don't remember if I figured out exactly her age, but she had a child who was, she's in her seventh year of her tenure track at a college. She had a four-year-old child 7 years ago when she came to work at Acheron, SUNY Acheron. So I'd say mid-30s.
Yeah. And what happened to her with her child is just, you know, devastating. No mother ever wants to go through something like that. I found myself being, you know, at times annoyed with her, at times, you know, why, how could you possibly let that happen? You know, things like that that go through your head, but you think, is this woman stupid? And then you realize she's not a stupid woman. She's actually pretty smart. But,
well, the fact is, I don't know if you have children, but the fact is that, what happened is that she looked away for a moment and became immersed in something else for a few minutes, and her daughter ran down to the road and was run over. And we'd like to think that that could never have happened to us. But the fact is, if you're taking care of a child all the time, you know, it's not possible to spend every second staring at them. And those things do happen, and they're horrible, and she does blame herself. The thing is that, you know, people make those kinds of mistakes all the time where they look away, and they're usually not so unlucky to have to pay that big a price for it.
Right.
So that's what I would say, is that it is a horrible, I mean, it would be a horrible thing to have to live with. But I don't think it's a matter of stupidity or intelligence. I think it's a matter of it's difficult to watch a child and look at them every second.
And it must be difficult for her to see other children too, you know, that see other people's children. You think, wow, that should be me right now. That should be me with that child, the child growing. And
although I'd like to show that Nan, that would of course be painful, and I imagine it is painful for people who have lost a child. But I also show Nan that she does have a loving relationship with her niece, and that she hasn't turned into a bitter person. She's a very damaged person, but she still, you know, sees other children and gets some, you know, joy. She also, forms a relationship in some ways with one of her students is a young single mother, and she reaches out to her. So she's not shutting herself off from children or other people with children because of that tragedy, which would be an understandable thing to do, but I think she has tried very hard not to do that.
What I like about your book, this book, is the fact that it's funny because people say things to Nan, like they'll come out and say these harsh things to her, and you think, wow, these characters are so hard on her, you know, and you think what she's been through, you think they'd be more sympathetic, but, you know, but it's interesting how they come out with these things, and like, wow. That's a hardest thing to say.
I have the experience of people saying harsh things. And in my experience, people do, either out of carelessness or actual malice. And having suffered a tragedy does not make you immune to people saying insensitive things. And, of course, what you just said, people would also blame her, you know, that for what. People, they especially don't want to think that such a horrible thing could ever happen to them. So what I have seen very often is that when we hear about some horrible tragedy, we want to know right away, what did that person do wrong to have that happen to them? because if I figure out what they did wrong, then I can be sure that could never happen to me.
Right.
And I think that makes us, you know, blame the victim very often that, you know, I mean, sometimes maybe they did do something wrong, but we want to put distance between ourselves and that person so that we can assure ourselves that that could not happen to us.
Like a disease or something, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like nobody wants to be around somebody who's sick, you know, and you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's an interesting way that we do that sometimes with. And that's why it's so admirable when you see people that, you know, people that stick by their husbands or wives when uh-huh. they do get sick, when they do become ill, when they, I mean, that's the real test of love. Do you stick with somebody right up until the end, even through thick and thin, and the uh-huh. thick, it can get pretty bad, you know, and
absolutely.
And what, does writing help you, is writing cathartic for you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it is. I mean, my hope is always that that isn't all it is, but it is the first probably reason I do write is that I often write about things that scare or upset me, things that keep me up at night that I worry about, and by making up a story about it, it somehow gives me a little bit of distance from my own problems. And also make something out of that fear and worry. And I think any time you can make something, you know, constructive out of something that, you know, bad that has happened to you or something you're worried about, it feels like it has some meaning and purpose rather than, you know, just, you know, horrible chaos.
And what's with this ghost? Does this ghost really exist?
Which ghost?
The ice lady.
Oh, the ice lady.
Yeah.
I'm curious you asked that because I've noticed that the book has been classified as, and, you know, where it gets a little tag on Amazon, it gets a little ghost story. There is a ghost story. I don't really want to answer that because I think that should, you know, maybe that should be a little bit of the mystery of the book. But I don't see, I felt like that there's this sense of history that this, there was a woman who had lost a child in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that sense of that history of that tragedy pervading this, you know, this region, this area. But whether that is a real ghost or not, I will leave up to my readers.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, you really did hit a deer.
Yes, I did, unfortunately. And I don't think I killed it. My husband doesn't think I did either. He was in the car. I was driving home. This was about 2 years. This was in January 2014, so 2 years ago. My husband and I were driving home from Boston, and it was late in the day at time around dusk when deer tend to come out. I live in sort of a semi-rural area, and the sun was in my eyes, and all of a sudden there was a deer just, you know, I didn't even, it ran across the road and grazed my bumper. And so, you know, and I pulled over as Nanda screaming, and it was really hysterical. It was really, there was that feeling of hitting something and, you know, seeing this thing come out of nowhere was really startling and upsetting in a way I couldn't even really put my finger on. And my husband swore up and down. He said, you know, I think the deer's fine. He didn't hit it that hard. It did damage to the bumper, but there was no blood. We got out. We couldn't find the deer. We did not, as Nan does, go into the woods looking for the deer, but the deer was not on the road. So we got back in our car and went on our way. But that stayed with me, that feeling, that thump, that sense of something that's coming out of nowhere. I kept trying to do something with it, to write something about it. I went back and recently looked in my notebooks that I just wrote down, hit a deer. And I don't really journal in my notebooks. They're just where I write my drafts.
Yeah.
But very occasionally I will, write something that happened and this was startling enough that I wrote it down.
And it fits right into the book just perfectly. And it,
it really kind of haunted me. I started the book. That happened in January. There was another event that happened 2 weeks after that was quite horrendous, horrible local tragedy where two college girls were killed in a hit and run, quite close to where I live. And that, was just a horrible tragedy, which, it was very close, and I would hear people in my community talk about it. It was the college where my daughter was going.
So did you know the girls?
I did not know them. I knew people who knew them. My daughter, I don't even think my daughter knew them, but she knew who they were. But it was just a really, painful, horrible, horrible thing to happen. And I did not think about, I'm not the kind of writer who thinks, oh, this horrible thing happened, let me write about it. But it did, it combined with that hitting the deer, and I started writing the book in May. So somewhere between, those two events in January, those two events kept haunting me. And eventually it turned into this other story that, my story has nothing to do with those, those college girls. They, in that incident, the woman who had hit them was apprehended within like 10 minutes of the incident. So it was,
Wow. It's just, it's horrible. You can't even imagine the feeling of doing that. That's happening, of you doing it or knowing somebody who's done it. I can't even imagine the horror of it.
I found myself very obsessed with that, with what it would be like. What it would be like to have been the person to have done it, which led me, I suppose, to thinking about this character. What it would be like to be accused of that.
Right, exactly, and all that. The horribleness of it, it's just too—it's too much to take in for me. I just think of that happening.
Well, that's why I think it is too—it is hard to take in, and that's why, for me, the way I take it in is to think of some other way of writing about it. So I came up with a very different kind of story with those events at the center of them.
I love Dottie. Dottie's like a.
She's my favorite too.
At first, I thought, well, is she just pretending to like Nan, or is she gonna turn against her at some point? And all these things go through your head. Like, what are these characters really like? When you first meet a character, you think, I wonder if they're really the way they seem, or is there something more to them than that?
Dottie is actually just a genuinely nice person, and probably the nicest person in the book. And I mentioned this in the acknowledgement, so I'm not giving too much away. I'm very good friends with the secretary of the English department at the school where I teach. And I credit her with some of the inspiration for Dottie, being as kind a person as Dottie, with none of Dottie's fault. She's not necessarily a gossip. But she is, I think my friendship with this woman really inspired this character, and I just find her actually the most delightful. And this is the moral compass of the book. And actually, in the very first scene, Nan thinks, when she's standing there on the road, debating whether she should go look for the deer, she thinks Dottie would. Because
she's
kind of the moral conscience.
Right.
Right.
She's the goody-two-shoes of the novel.
But she's not even a goody-two-shoes. She's a genuinely good person.
Yeah.
And there are people like that.
Maybe that is, think of goody-two-shoes as being good, people. I don't.
There's an association that's being, like, too good. But I don't, I think she is just genuinely a good person. And, I'm probably giving away some of the suspense. If you want to worry about Dottie being the possible murderer, then go ahead. Maybe I'm not telling the truth.
we have to keep all those things secret. But it's hard not to talk about characters that make an impression on you when you're reading a book. I mean, that's what you want to talk about. You want to say, well, I hate that person, or I love that person, or, I don't relate to that person, or whatever. But And I know... The one thing authors don't like is when you don't feel one way or the other about something. It's either like it or hate it. If you hate it, that's fine. You're allowed to hate. Everybody's different, What somebody's going to love, somebody else might hate.
exactly.
But do you get a lot of letters criticizing your books or telling people they like, or people telling you like?
I get a moderate amount of emails coming through my either my website or my Facebook page or Goodreads. And I have to say that most of them are very positive. And I've gotten really lovely emails from people and letters from people saying how much they like the books, and especially touching people who have said that the books inspired them to write or helped them through a hard time. But yes, every once in a while I'll get some strangely angry email. I just got one a few days ago about River Road, and the person, not to give anything away, but the person was angry that an animal may have died in the course of the book. And she wrote as if I had killed this animal, or as if I were, you know, in favor of the killing of animals. She was, you know, really angry. She was like, how could you have written this? What's wrong with you?
Right. Anyways, I mean, they relate it to you. It's like you're... Whatever you write, people judge you for.
Yes, if I was, like, suggesting, and it's, you know, that this was a good thing. And I found it just an odd email on many levels, you know, sort of the confusion of, you know, portraying something in a fictional work as if you were recommending it. And also that she was so upset about the animal. I mean, there were people who die in this book as well. So But the animal that dies, which I felt very sad about too, but, you know, sad things happen in books.
People are very close to animals, especially now. It seems like I want to say worse, that's not the right word, but it's even more like that now than it's ever been. The people are closer to their... I mean, you hear people talk about animals like they were, you know, their family, and they are family to them. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. I think people go a little overboard with it at times. But
as you were talking, I'm summoning my little dog to me so she can come over and cuddle with me.
But you know, that's the thing with animals. Animals don't judge you. Animals do not. They just love you, and that's what and you can't help but understand that. That's why a lot of people love animals, because animals are there for you. You come home, you had a bad day, you come home, and your animal still loves you no matter what you've done.
Right.
You can't always say that about people, though.
she has this elderly cat that's still really her old Oolong, who's her only companion. It's true. It's I'm very attached to my little dog, especially since I spend a good deal of time alone as a writer, and it's nice to have this little companion who doesn't talk, so she doesn't get in the way of my writing, but she's, kind of just gives me love and gets me to get up and take a walk once in a while.
Now, do you already have an idea for the next mystery, or are you already writing the next mystery?
I have, right now, I'm finishing actually a children's book that I just wrote, so I'm working on that, but I do have two other adult books in the offing. One is a book about actually that is more of a ghost story, and that I am going to be working on a revision. I've already written it, but I'm going to be working with a new editor on a revision of that. And then I have an idea for the book after that, which is still a formulating idea, something I'm trying to figure out.
It's funny you mentioned ghosts. I read a book by Noel Hind. I don't know if you ever heard of him, called Ghosts one time. It just totally freaked me out. One of the best ghost stories I've ever read in my whole life.
I'm always looking for a good ghost story. I don't think I've read that. I will look that up.
And it's not a book, I don't even know if it's available anymore. It's been out for years, but it has stayed with me.
Ghosts by Noel Hind?
It's called Ghosts. By Noel Hind, H-Y-N-D. He never wrote anything as good as this book. This book was just one of those, one in a million things where you're like, wow, this is incredible. You know, and I've read some of his other books, and they just didn't resonate like this one did.
I will look for it.
And I don't know how you're going to find it. I know he lived in Pittsburgh at one point. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. I guess because I was so impressed. One of those authors I'd love to interview and tell them how much I love the book. Because there's nothing more wonderful than being able to tell an author how much you enjoy their book and to get the reaction from that, you know. And
they're usually happy, I would think.
Yeah, they usually are. I mean, sometimes they don't even want to talk to you to begin with, but it has nothing to do with whether you like the book or not. It's just they're too busy, you know. But so you're constantly thinking about a mystery to write, I guess.
Thinking about the next book, definitely, whether it's mystery or fantasy. I am always sort of sifting through in my head different ideas and seeing which ones sort of keep building, which ones stay with me. Because, you know, I have lots of ideas and I'll have an idea for a couple of weeks and then I'll sort of daydream about it for a few weeks and then I'll come to a point where I'll go, nah. have the staying power, but the ideas that stay with me, you know, that and start growing, then those are the books that I end up writing.
Now, what awards have you won? I think you won. Did you win the Hammett Prize?
I won the Hammett Prize. And that's the main one that I've won. I've been nominated for a number of prizes, but that is the prize that I've won.
That's great. I mean, it's got to feel. What exactly is the award? What does it look like?
Oh, it's great. It looks like this little statue that stands on my mantelpiece, and it looks like a combination of the Thin Man with a Maltese Falcon head.
Oh, really? Well, that sounds cool.
Yes, it's a funny little statue, but it's a great one.
Have you ever been nominated for an Edgar?
I was not for an Edgar. I was nominated for the Mary Higgins Clark Award, which is given at the same time as the Edgar. It's usually presented at the award ceremony, but I was not. No Edgar.
There's a book that's up for an Edgar in May that I am so sure is going to win the award that I've never read a book that has affected me as much as this book has. It's a book called What She Knew by Gillie McMillan.
Oh, I'll have to look
at
that.
It is one of those books. First of all, you're not going to want it to end. I didn't want this book to end, and I'm still upset that it ended. And it is just the most stunning. It's her first novel. And you think, well, the first novel, how good can it be? This book is tremendous. I mean, and I can't even say how great it is. It is that great. And if it doesn't win the Edgar, there's somebody's fixed the Edgars, because I'm just absolutely certain it's going to win.
All right, well, look at that. You're giving me a lot of good recommendations, which I'm always looking for.
But it's one of those books that I took it everywhere with me. I couldn't wait to get into it again because it's so compelling. And it's about a missing child, so it's not an easy book to read, and yet it's fascinating from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. I will. Yeah, I've seen it. I will absolutely look for that.
But she's. I can't wait for her next book. I can't wait to see what it's like. You know, and when you read a book that you really love, you're like, give me the next one. I want the next book. You know, and that's how we feel. You know, and when you think you have to wait a year for the next book, it's kind of. You feel kind of insulted, like, how dare they make me wait that long? You know. But at the same time, if you see a book and there's like 18 books in the series and you haven't read any of them, you're like, well, how do we even begin to catch up?
Mm-hmm.
Like Game of Thrones. I want to read all the Game of Thrones books, but there's how many? It's like 6,000 pages.
Much easier to watch the series.
And not that I don't appreciate good writing, I do, but the thought of reading 6,000 pages back to back. Well, I don't know about that. But I mean, are you a fast reader?
I'm not a fast reader, but I am a devoted reader in that I read all the time. So, you know, I always have a book that I'm reading. I read every, you know, afternoon and every night. So, I probably read about 50 or 60 books a year, which I think of as a fairly moderate, mm-hmm. reading habit. I know people who, you know, read faster and read more, but I have other things to do.
Exactly, I'm sure you do, but yeah. Including.
So I always read, and there's never been and I always keep a book with me. My daughter and I came up with this word. She texted me one day. She said, "Oh, I'm waiting somewhere and I forgot to bring a book with me. I hate that." And so we came up with the word booklorn. If you're someplace and you have to wait someplace and you've somehow forgotten your book, you are booklorn.
Right. Exactly. We all know that. We all know that feeling. I've been there. Like, even if I'm in waiting in the supermarket line, I still have a book with me a lot of times.
Yeah. Yep, I hate to be anywhere without a book.
I don't like that feeling. It's just, it's like, and we all know how comforting books are. I mean, you sit with a good book and you just get into it and you're like, everybody leave me alone, just let me read, you know? But how many times do you have a book and somebody will approach you that you know and you're like, oh, geez, do I have to talk to them? I really want to read my book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds so horrible, but it's so true sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like seeing somebody in the supermarket that you see somebody you used to work with that you didn't care for. And you think, oh, how do I avoid that person?
Right. Or you're getting on a plane and you're looking forward to the next hour of reading and you see somebody else. I like people though too. I try to remember to put down that's okay to put down my book for
I think I'm a little too obsessive about reading sometimes but you know what? I like that. I don't want to give that up.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in the hospital, this was 6-7 years ago, I had a Stephen King book I was reading, and I took it all through the hospital with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a comfort to me. It really comforted me when I needed it.
Yeah, and to me that is really one of the greatest things that a book can do. And when people have told me that that reading one of my books helped them, like, you know, get through waiting for a procedure in a hospital or because I've been there, you know, many times where I've had to be someplace where you really don't want to be, and you really don't want to think about what's going on. And if you are able to get lost in a book, it really is such a, it saves you. And to me, that's the biggest thing that I could want, you know, for my books to do. And one of the biggest things that I look for in reading is that there are times where I just need to be taken a little bit away from what's going on.
Exactly. I remember when I was in the hospital, they'd wake me up at like 6 in the morning, and this big, huge guy would give me a shot. And he looked like a fullback. And I thought, it scared me to death when I first saw him. Like, he's going to give me my shot? And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to survive this shot.
So,
but it was freaky, and it's like and every morning I get woken up to be given a shot, and I was like, I don't like this. I don't look forward to this, and I don't like shots. I don't know if anybody likes shots. I guess there are people who do, but I'm not one of them. But you know, it's just this. But being able to get back into my book took my mind off all that.
Right.
It's amazing. Then that's one of the beautiful things about a book. It takes your mind off all of your problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just get involved in something else. Maybe that's why we like to read so much, or somewhat of the reason we like to read. And you know, that's what life's all about. Even as I'm sitting here, the sun is breaking out here. Oh, it's nice to see the sun.
Yeah, I know. I'm seeing it too, which is nice. I have to drive to New Jersey today, so I'm glad. It looks like the snow is. It was a pretty snowy morning, but it looks like it's.
Now, are you doing a lot of bookstore?
I've done some. I'm actually going to New Jersey today to visit my mother. But I've done a few readings in the in my local Hudson Valley area, and also the Mysterious Bookshop in New York City, and Oblong Books in Rhinebeck. I'll put in a plug for them because they have lots of my stock of my signed books on hand. So. If anyone would like looking for a signed copy, go to Oblong Books in Rhinebeck.
Have they featured your books in Mystery Scene yet? I love that magazine.
I don't think Mystery Scene. I had a review in the International Thriller Writers, or an interview. Mystery Scene, I don't think so.
Well, they should. I'll tell her. I know the woman who does the magazine. I'll tell her to.
Yes. I can use all the help I can get.
It is one of the most wonderful mystery magazines out there. I love reading that magazine.
I've definitely read it. And I will be doing a reading at Woodstock on the 20th. So I'm mostly doing local events. It's the middle of the, or the beginning of the semester, and I'm teaching, so...
You know what? And you know what's interesting nowadays? It's like when you talk to a writer, the writer is on to like the second book after the one that you're talking to them about. They don't always remember the book, and it's kind of daunting for me. And I'm thinking, wow, they don't remember the book. Now what do I do? You know.
Well, it is. You are on to the next book. It's true. You've maybe even written the next book. Review in my mind what happened in the, hopefully it's still fairly fresh, what happened in that book. But it's true, sometimes people ask me questions about books I wrote 15 years ago, and my memory is imperfect of those books, which I feel bad about. It's like, you know, forgetting an old friend, but I've written a number of books since then, so it's possible that, I mean, the main elements of the book is probably I still remember, but yeah, there could be a small character or someone that I don't. River Road is still pretty fresh in my mind. For one thing, I drive on that road every day, and you know, I think about the events that led me to write the book, so the book is still pretty vivid in my mind.
I'd love to see another book with Nan and you know who. I won't say who, but but I think they'd make a good series couple.
That's an interesting thought from your lips to my editor's ears.
I like that. I like the thought of that. Like, I want to know, and that's how I felt after I read the book. I can't really say much more than that, other than I wanted to see them again. And you know,
I love series, and I never have done one. I always think it's because usually I put my characters through so much in their book that I sort of like they really don't need to have anything bad happen to them again. Like, they should now go live a quiet life.
But when you read a lot of books, you get attached to certain characters, and I found myself getting attached to these two and thinking, I want to know more about these two. I want another story with these two in it, and that's how I felt. And That's a tribute to you, because it means that they're real, that they feel real to me.
Right.
And as a writer, I'm sure it's a great thing to hear.
It is a great thing to hear, yes.
But I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way. I'm sure you've gotten other letters about that.
I've gotten some nice comments, and the person who's angry at me for my animal abuse.
Well, that's going to happen. That's going to happen when you do that. So, I mean, I think it happens to every writer if they do it. And
you get some strange, yes, but no, I do. Thank you so much. There is no better compliment.
But your books are real. You don't skirt the issues. You just things happen and they happen, and you can't sugarcoat things. And if you sugarcoat a book too much, people will get, you know, people won't like it.
No, well, that's true, and it's the, you know, bad things happen. I mean, and I always tell, I teach creative writing, and I tell my students, our tendency in life is that we want to make things all right. We want to smooth over things. We don't want to have awkward situations, or, you know, but in fiction, it's just the opposite. You really want to, you don't want to solve your character's problems too quickly or smooth over things. You want them to have to experience these bad things that are happening to them.
I just wonder, is there an author that you can't wait for the next book on?
Oh, there are many. Stephen King, for one. I'm always looking for Stephen King's next book, and I was disappointed he didn't. He always publishes one in the fall, and it's this year was a collection of stories, which doesn't quite do it for me.
Those stories are tremendous.
Oh, the stories are great, but I'm just a novel reader, and my daughter said to me the other day, she said, are you, so I was complaining to her, and she said, are you honestly saying that Stephen King is not writing fast enough for you? I guess not. But I also like his son, Joe Hill, and I'm looking forward to he's got a book coming out. In
April. The Fireman, yes. I see
that. I love horror, and I love really, I think Joe Hill is great.
His books are twisted. They're very twisted books, his books, I have to say.
Yes, they are, and I like that.
Did you like that?
Yes, I do, and I'm always, and Sarah Waters is a British writer.
Oh, yes. Paying guests, yes, indeed.
Who wrote one of my very favorite books in the last decade was The Little Stranger. I read her last book was The Paying Guest. So she comes out with, she's an excellent writer, comes out with something like maybe every 5 to 6 years. And so I am very, very much, I know it won't be probably for a few more years, looking forward to her next book.
I'll tell you what book really got to me, the Lake House.
Oh, I have not read that.
Kate Morton's book. Oh, that woman has incredible talent. I to say she's talented is the understatement of the year. It's an unbelievably good book. That's another book that I did not want to end. The beautiful writing, the way she writes is just, it really is tremendous.
Well, I will have to get that you've given me quite a list.
If you don't read any of the books this year, those two you should read. They are amazing. I mean, just
I will definitely go for that one.
I can't wait for her next book. I'm like, no, I need it now, even though I haven't read some of her backlist, and I probably will at some point, it was just so good. I'm bad with reading backlist. I don't know what it is. I don't always want to do it. I want new.
Yeah, I don't know. I do, if I find a writer that I like, I will go to their backlist. But it's true, it depends on the author. Sometimes you are sort of more geared to wanting to read the next new thing.
But I don't think you're going to write a series. I think you're just going to do a standalone each time.
I think probably. Although I love the idea of a series, I don't think that's in the cards for me right now. And I've written series in trilogies and fantasy and literature.
What intrigues me is the fact that you could write another book about those two. And mm-hmm. I know you could do it. And I think it would be wonderful. But I'll never get to read it. That's the sad part.
Well, you never know.
If your editor's listening now, maybe. But.
And writers have gone back. I know Dennis Lehane is another author I really admire. He had written 5 of his series with the two detectives.
Right. Eric. Angie and Patrick, I think is their name.
Right. And then he stopped. And he said himself that he felt like he had put those people through too much. And then maybe 10 years later, he went and wrote, he brought them back.
Right.
So, you can do that.
Well, and that's what the public wants, that when they relate to characters, they want more of them. And can you blame them if it's something they feel comfortable with? They want what they want. Readers are like that.
Yep.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. I can talk to you all day. You're such an interesting, pleasant person to talk to.
Thank you, and I love talking books. That's practically my favorite thing.
Yeah, there's something about book groups, and you sit in a book room and you talk to people, and you just feel like you're all on the same level. Nobody's above anybody else. You're talking. And it's just such a wonderful experience. Being a member of a book club for over 10 years, I really enjoyed that. And, there are always going to be people who didn't like the book. And you look at them and you think, well, they're a little crazy anyway, so what do they know, But the book, again, is called River Road, and it's published by Touchstone. Carol Goodman has been our guest. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. It's been a really pleasure to talk to you, too. Thank you so much for having me on.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.